This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Time Sensitive, a film podcast exploring the best and worst under-the-radar movies released in the past 18 months. I'm Sam, and I'm here with my good friend and co-host, Ian. You can't do that on this medium.
I'm signing my introduction! I practiced it for you all. And for the sake of this movie, I am signing my welcome. So it's Shalom. I learned the sign for Shalom because it's important.
Of course.
Welcome to the show. Okay. My name Ian. I have really tiny fingers.
That's great. This is not a video format. We don't film any of it.
Not yet.
Unfortunately.
Not yet. We're not there yet.
I went for the aesthetic of it and it failed, but I did try and I learned all that just for you too. That was my surprise
done.
For you.
Nice job.
Welcome to the show.
Yes.
This week, Sam and I tackle our third Best Picture nominee in time-sensitive history, Darius Marder's Sound of Metal.
Wonderful. If you are new to Time Sensitive, welcome. And if you are a returning listener, welcome back. We're so glad to have you here.
We sure are. Our show is unique. We like to review movies not immediately upon their release, like most podcasts do, but one last time, about a year or so later, before they disappear into the history books.
And we focus on the movies that might have fallen through the cracks. Not the major blockbusters or the billion-dollar grossers, but the quality cinema swimming just beneath the surface.
We want to talk about every element of a movie, from acting and screenwriting to technical choices, music, release structure, and more. We really dive into why these movies might be under the radar in the first place, and why they might deserve more love, or at the very least, another watch.
However, Ian and I simply cannot do this alone, so each week we welcome one of our friends to the table to review a movie with us. And this week, we welcome back a guest we've had before in the past. We know some of his friends are probably listening because he brought in a lot of new listeners last time around. What I'm going to say...
Highest rated episode ever.
What I'm going to ask of you, those new listeners that maybe are coming back to hear him again, maybe give us a 5-star, give us a review. It helps the podcast a ton.
Shameless plug.
I am plugging to your friends, Nate. This is our guest, Nate Clark.
Hey!
Great to be back. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. You were our first ever interview, or first ever co-host of season 3. So this is like a full circle moment now.
I love it.
Now we're halfway through the season. Can you believe it?
So friends, I know you're listening. Make sure and give them a review.
Yeah, there we go.
We didn't pay him to say that, but we did ask him.
We might slip some under the table.
Well, our listeners do know you because you were our first episode of the season when we reviewed Peanut Butter Falcon, which was a favorite of ours and a great way to open. But we've already asked you all the standard questions that we ask everybody. So we just want to ask you, how are you?
Doing great. I mean, I just got engaged.
Woo woo!
Yeah!
Love is in the air.
Yeah, so I literally just told Ian, so very exciting, lots of big life.
I'm super excited.
Yeah, big life events coming up, but also just being vaccinated and going back to the movies.
Isn't that amazing?
It feels so good. Like,
what have you seen already in theaters?
Oh man, nothing good, but...
There is nothing out right
but
now.
What an underwhelming return.
I mean, like... I saw Mortal Kombat in IMAX. I hadn't been to an IMAX in years.
They put that in IMAX?
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy.
It didn't feel any different than probably the normal HBO Max experience.
Yeah.
But, hey, why not? Like,
sure.
Well, I'm so glad you've been back. I've been back. Sam, have you been back yet?
I haven't been back yet, but I also have a 2-month-old baby.
Oh, my gosh. Excuses. Fair enough. Well, we are talking about a movie that has been available on streaming platforms for quite some time now.
Yes.
So you don't have to go to the theater to watch this one. But Sam, tell us why we are talking about Sound of Metal.
Yes, Sound of Metal. You'll find out next week when we do our top 10 lists on our top 10 movies of 2020. You might find this movie on my list somewhere. I had such enjoyment watching this movie. This movie moved me. And I wanted to give ourselves a chance to talk about it because we've all been stuck in our houses. We don't really get to talk movies outside of this venue right here. And I knew that you had some interesting feelings about it, Ian.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to kind of flesh those out and figure out what your thoughts were. And Nate, I just wanted you here to talk movies again. We haven't done it in a while. We texted a little about Mortal Kombat.
Right.
Because we had to. We watched it as soon as it came out. Yeah, everybody watched Mortal Kombat, right, Ian?
Yeah.
But I wanted to do it because, one, it won a couple of Oscars. It does something so very unique that none of our other movies have done. And I think it's worth talking about.
Great. I'm excited.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Yeah. There's a ton to talk about here. And upon my second viewing, I was like, okay, Sam, we got it. This is going to be a kick-ass episode again.
Awesome. We're going to have to give you the warning. We always do.
Yes.
The great thing about Time Sensitive is that you don't need to have seen Sound of Metal to listen to our discussion. Sure, it helps, but it's not required. We get it. Your time is sensitive and everyone is busy. So we did the hard part and watched the movie for you. Sit back and let us tell you if it's worth your time. Seeing that we don't shy away from anything, this is your spoiler alert.
Mm.
So, yeah, if you don't want us to spoil the movie for you and you have not yet seen Sound of Metal, you can pause this episode right now. Head over to Amazon Prime, where it is currently streaming free for subscribers.
Sound of Metal has a runtime of 2 hours and rated R for language throughout and brief nude images. That is such a weak thing.
It's a drawing.
You know some mom was like super upset about that. They were talking about pubes.
It's very brief and it's not even an actual person.
Yeah.
It's a poor drawing by Riz Ahmed. Well, I just wanted to open with the first page of Sound of Metal of the screenplay, which reads, Interior Club Stage, Night. Harsh white lights illuminate Ruben, 40. Beady eyes, punk-like, weathered boyish face and tattoos everywhere. He's waiting intensely for the beginning, for it all to start. He looks up as his focus locks in tight on Lou, 30, an assured freak creature dressed in black with an air of royalty about her. The loop of her sound grows. Guitar pedals and synthesizers lay on the stage floor as she looks to Ruben with a suddenly manic intensity. She picks up her beat, Telecaster, and strikes a chord with surprising menace. She stomps on her looping pedal. The sound hisses low, wild and bracing. Ruben stares and waits, poised. He can almost taste her sweat. She flashes a quick glance toward him, and Ruben unleashes, bringing the sticks down upon his drums with pure demonic ecstasy. Lou leans in toward the microphone, relishing the moment. Her desperate and distorted scream fills the hall. The whites of Ruben's eyes flash as if igniting an erotic charge, this glorious being merging with him. Sweet drips from Ruben's hair and his eyes burn in an endless climax, or pain. Oh, those damn are the words of Darius and Abraham Martyr. Sound of Metal, yeah, it's an incredible start. A sensory marvel, Sound of Metal was over a decade in the making. It was originally conceived as a documentary by writer-director Derek Cianfrance called Metalhead. Cian France directed Blue Valentine and The Place Beyond the Pines, both starring Ryan Gosling, in case you recognize that name. And the latter, The Place Beyond the Pines, is actually written by his friend Darius Martyr.
Oh,
so after many funding issues, Cian France handed the directing reins off to Martyr, who actually wrote the screenplay with his brother and the film's composer, Abraham Martyr. So Cian France retained a story writing credit, which why when you saw this nominated for Best Original Screenplay, his name was still on there. But originally starred Matthias Schoenaerts and Dakota Johnson.
What?
Which would have been
if we had another Dakota Johnson movie.
But the project eventually landed Riz Ahmed and Olivia Cooke, and the film and it was filmed in just 24 days, not consecutive, but just 24 days of work. Sound of Metal premiered at the 2019 Toronto Film Festival, where it was acquired by Amazon Studios. Amazon's distribution was delayed slightly due to the COVID pandemic, but ultimately released theatrically and on Prime Video on November 20th of 2020. Sound of Metal earned 6 Academy Award nominations, including 1 for Best Picture and 1 each for Ahmed and co-star Paul Raci for Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor, respectively. Ultimately, it took home 2 Oscars, as Sam mentioned earlier, 1 for the newly consolidated Best Sound category and 1 for Best Film Editing. Sound of Metal became Amazon's 2nd Best Picture nominee after 2016's Manchester by the Sea, which won Best Actor and Best Original Screenplay at the 89th Academy Awards. So Amazon coming back to play.
Yeah, they come back and they win 2 more Oscars.
Yes.
Way to go, Amazon. Yeah.
Nice work. Not too bad for a nice 5-year hiatus here. But definitely a technical marvel that we're going to talk about plenty this afternoon.
Yeah.
But definitely a technical marvel that we're going to talk plenty about in this episode. So, Sam, why don't you give those who might not be familiar with it a little brief plot summary, or to remind those who've already seen it?
Sure thing. Paraphrased from Amazon, Metal drummer and former addict Ruben begins to lose his hearing when a doctor tells him that the condition will worsen. He thinks his career and life are over. In the hopes of preventing a relapse and with the encouragement of his girlfriend Lou, Ruben checks into a rehab for the deaf to help him adapt to his new life. After being welcomed and accepted by a new community, Ruben must choose between his new normal and the life he once knew.
So that's beautiful writing by Amazon. Nate, give us your own little brass tacks version of that. What's this really about?
If I can boil it down, it's an addict musician. He's been sober. He loses his hearing, and he must face head on all the new changes from hearing, career, relationships, and more.
Lovely.
That was great.
Thank you.
Gosh, you're so good. This is why we have you on the show.
Why did I have to read three sentences?
Well, let's talk about our first impressions for this. This is how we always start our conversations. So I don't remember us watching this together ever, Sam. Nope. And Nate, we didn't watch this together. No. So, Sam, seeing as it's one of your favorites of the year, tell us why and tell us about your first impression of it.
So my first impression of it, I was blown away. I think it wasn't really what I expected. When I picked this movie, or when I wanted to see this movie, I was like, oh, cool, a music-related movie. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily thinking, oh, this is going to be about someone losing their hearing. I thought there was going to be a lot of heavy rock music, and I like movies that involve music very integral to the plot. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really cool when it's able to be done well. And I was not expecting to be kind of like hit by a 2x4 with this thing.
Oh, yeah.
In the face.
I had tears in my eyes multiple times when I saw it. I saw it by myself the first time, and I watched it again last night with my wife. And it was her first viewing of it, and it impacted her pretty well as well. Mm-hmm. But like the first time, I was like, it awakened something, like a deep fear that I didn't know I had.
Mm. Yeah.
And we'll get into that kind of as we go along. But I want to hear your guys' first impressions.
It's an underlying horror movie of sorts.
A little bit.
It kind of is.
Yeah.
Nate, how did you first watch it? Thoughts?
First watched it. So a little to preface, when I saw the first preview, I immediately stopped because I was like, this is going to be good. I love Riz Ahmed. I don't want anything ruined by previews.
Sure.
So I really
stopped.
When I know there's something like, I should be interested in. I don't want to know the rest.
You heard those two drum beats, was like, that's it.
Yeah. And originally I thought it was going to be more like Green Room, where like, there's metal, there's violence, there's this behind the scenes. So learning like all
Green
this,
Room's kick ass too.
It is awesome. Yeah. So very different from this film. I went in thinking wrong, but yeah, I was blown away. I was so impressed. I watched it on Amazon at home with my girlfriend and roommate, and we were all just like engrossed in it. Like we were just captivated. No one was on their phones doing anything else. Like we were locked into this movie, and it blew us away too. It was really emotional. I think all three of us had tears at different parts. My roommate was farther in a dark corner, so we can't confirm that, but
can't deny it. Either,
yes.
Though.
Can't deny it either.
Okay. I've watched this a couple times now.
Yep.
The first time I watched my projector, with an old sound bar. So the sound wasn't amazing, but it was definitely filled the room. I really enjoyed the first two acts of it. And this is, I think, where you were talking about my criticism comes.
Yes.
The first two acts are emotionally impactful. I was super disappointed, though, with Act 3, where I thought the direction it took was not at all where I wanted it to go, let alone where I expected it to go. Just because Ruben was so prominent in the first two acts, and then he was kind of relegated and ignored in the last part of the movie, and that was super disappointing to me. And then Lou is so different.
Yes.
Which makes me really uncomfortable. I hate when a character just changes without explanation, which, or at least we learn why, but it didn't seem like an appropriate response. It wasn't something that deserved to happen, I guess, in any way. So it felt like a bad dream sequence for me, and I really just distasted that whole segment. So I watched it again, and I took advice from you, Sam.
Yes.
Because you've said to watch this with headphones on.
Yeah, that's how I watched it first. I was sitting down here in the basement. My wife was working. I had a little bit of free time, and I was like, I'm going to watch this movie. I plugged my noise-canceling headphones into my PlayStation so I wouldn't wake her or bother her while she was working, and watched it that way. And I think it completely changes the feeling of the movie. What did you think?
It was a brilliant choice.
Yes.
It brought so many things out that I didn't hear the first time, and it had a whole new emotion for me. I was able to connect parts of the screenplay to other parts later in the screenplay that I never would have connected first.
Right.
Yeah.
And not just the cool sound design of getting it in the headphones, you know, that's cool and stuff, but it was so more immersive that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost the way that I think these filmmakers intended for you to watch or intended to get that effect was that immersive feeling. So I can't agree with you enough, watch it with noise-canceling headphones if you have the opportunity.
Yes.
Yes, it'll evoke so much more emotion and your connection with his character and the deaf community as a whole.
I agree.
Do either of you have any experience with deaf community at all?
I do not, no.
I do.
Okay.
So I've taken ASL for a student when I worked at a school. We learned ASL for him.
Look at these connections.
And I also grew up with two deaf friends. So from third grade on through senior year, we were classmates, we were friends. Awesome. They've gone on to do amazing things. They both had cochlear implants. So like,
oh, okay.
I've known about that. And it's just crazy to see how technology has kind of increased. And like when they got it, it seemed like so new. Like it was like third grade, I think, when they got theirs. And they had like personal speakers at their desk for the teacher to communicate. Because they were just included in our classroom. Like it wasn't.
Okay, immersion.
They didn't go to the separate schools or anything. But, and I also have a cousin who's hearing impaired who doesn't want to get a cochlear implant. She just, and doesn't want to do ASL either. So you just have to try to understand her type of speech. Mm-hmm. And then she can read your lips and hear enough. She's not fully deaf. But to me, that's been second nature because we've grown up together.
Right.
That I can always understand her, that I forget sometimes like how isolating she feels when other people can't understand her and she can't communicate with other people as well. So
that really hit home in this movie, it that did. Isolation feeling for a number of reasons.
Oh yeah.
Are you fluent in ASL or?
No, I took like a one semester course.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you weren't able to know if my signing was exactly correct.
It looked good. Like your finger spelling, name, you know, it was fun in the movie to like recognize so many of the signs that they were
you
doing.
You did. Okay.
Yeah. And even just the way that like, they're banging on the table to get each other's attention. Like you learn all the things about the deaf community, not just how to speak with your hands, just the way they do it. It's so amazing and special. So,
yeah, I just want to give a shout out to this movie in general, because there's been a lot of controversy over the Academy's upcoming rules for inclusion and representation that are going to hit in the 94th Academy Awards. Right. So there's basically four categories of which you have to have representation from underrepresented groups. And they've actually called out in their specific rules beyond race, gender, and sexual orientation and identity. They've called out the deaf and hard of hearing community, which we'll talk about a little bit more later of how it's kind of seeing this really kind of burgeoning explosion in film lately. And we'll talk about that in the Academy's history with the deaf and hard of hearing community. But this movie, I think, does for that community what Peanut Butter Falcon did for the Down syndrome community.
Definitely.
And,
yeah.
And the only thing I don't like is that Riz Ahmed is not a member of that community, but Paul Racy is.
That was the coolest thing when I looked it up after the film to just learn how much he's involved already his entire life. So
there is a connection there, and that's great. So I'm really glad. I wanted to give this movie credit where credit is due for bringing stories like this to the screen and being so successful with them is a whole other piece. So let's dive right into our character discussion.
Yeah, we got to get into it.
And looking at our notes here that I've just built over the last couple of days, this movie is so much more character-driven than I thought when I first watched it. You know, I thought it was complex, but then after my second watch, I was like, oh, shit, there is a ton of layers to all of these characters. And there wasn't like three characters in the movie.
Yeah. And so they developed the hell out of
it. They sure did. Kudos to the Marder Brothers for this. Yes. So, Sam, why don't you start telling us about the lead character, Riz Ahmed?
Yeah, he plays Ruben in the movie, and he is our main character. He's a drummer. Kind of gave me vibes a little bit. Whiplash is one of my favorite movies of all time, so I was psyched about a drummer movie. But you may recognize him as Riz MC from his rap career. I honestly haven't heard any of his music.
I haven't either.
I might have to check it out.
I listened to some before episode.
What'd you think?
It's really fucking good. I mean, he's not an amazing rapper, but his lyrics are good.
Okay.
I mean, he's more conceptual. Gotcha. So it's not like traditional rap music that like I think we would expect to hear. But I didn't know anything about this until I saw the Sunday Morning Profile on CBS about him, that he actually has a rap. He's like in a rap group and has broken out and soloed. And he's actually on the Hamilton mixtape.
Oh, very cool.
I didn't know that.
No so way. Cool. If you want to see listen to some of his music, The Long Goodbye is his 2020 concept album.
Yeah.
I'll be checking it out. I'm very curious to what it sounds like. As far as his acting career, you might know him from The Night Of. He won the Emmy for Best Actor in a Miniseries. I haven't seen that.
Nate, you have your fan?
I did, yeah. Okay. Big fan.
He's accused of a crime, right?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know much about it either, but I didn't have HBO or Showtime or whatever.
It really seems... It came off the Serial podcast. That kind of popularity.
True crime stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, kind of being accused and how you can get caught up in the system and... It's amazing. I don't want to spoil anything.
Okay.
But that was his breakout.
Worth the watch. Yeah.
Okay.
You might also know him from Nightcrawler, opposite of Jake Gyllenhaal.
Mm-hmm.
He plays the supporting character. He's kind of the cameraman in that movie. Very interesting one. You might be interested in that one. The Sister Brothers, which Ian and I actually watched together.
We did.
I kind of forgot he was in this. He's another...
That was my only connection to him up until this point, was the Sister Brothers.
He was again, a supporting character in that. and he's been in some blockbusters, you know, not as a main character, but as a supporting one in the Jason Bourne movie, Rogue One, which is where I recognize him from.
Okay.
May the 4th be with you.
Ooh.
That is today,
this is the
isn't
day
it?
That we are recording.
So. Thanks, Nate.
It all
I had
fits.
To nerd out real quick.
And the Venom movie with Tom Hardy. He was in that one as well. So he's kind of been in the Marvel universe. He's been in the Star Wars universe. I'm sure after this Oscar nomination, Star Wars is going to be like, we need more Riz Ahmed in our movies.
I don't know about you all, but I like when he was nominated, I was like, oh yeah, of course I know who Riz Ahmed is. But I had no idea what I knew him from.
Right.
Yeah.
Like
for
he
sure.
was the most famous, unheard of person I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
You know? Which was so bizarre. But we have talked about him on our Oscar shows already this season.
Yes.
He is the first Muslim nominated for Best Actor. And this is his first nomination ever. He is a British Pakistani a person, so he was born and raised in Britain, I believe. Mm-hmm. So his accent is very thick. Again, something I know, Sam, you love when British actors play
it's
American
roles.
It's
so cool. Yeah. How do they do it? I don't understand.
It sounds so natural, but if we try to fake one, no, it's not
terrible.
It's not happening.
So campy. But really, his story kind of reminds me of the narrative from Blinded by the Light. Remember that movie we talked about
that
the British Pakistani. British Pakistani experience. I wonder if Riz is a Bruce Springsteen fan. But learning about his preparation for this movie is fascinating because he took 8 months to prepare for a one-month shoot movie, which is pretty stunning. His days consisted of 2 hours of ASL training, 2 hours of drumming training because he learned to do both for the movie, and 2 hours of the personal trainer.
Dang.
Because he is jacked as shit.
Yeah, I think we talked about that during our Oscars thing. Yes. Like, he is ripped as hell. He is impressive at signing. I was genuinely impressed on what he was able to do there. And his drumming's solid.
Yeah.
Like, they kind of cut up, so you're more just seeing his torso. You're not really seeing the contact. But he felt like a real drummer.
Convincing is what we needed this to be.
Exactly. And that's what he was.
I mean, I have to say, he's no Miles Teller. Because Miles Teller is phenomenal.
Yeah, Miles Teller was really fucking good.
Also, it's a totally different style of music, by the way.
Yeah,
just a little.
Yeah. But again, in this case, I think music is almost secondary to what the story is about. And we'll talk more about that. But tell us more about Ruben, Sam. What about his character is interesting? And
Ruben is a recovering heroin addict. So that's something we find out pretty early on. We have a phone call with one of his sponsors as he starts to lose his hearing. Yep. He is half of the band Black Gammon. He's the drummer, obviously. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this already. It's a heavy metal band, an experimental kind of heavy metal band. Because when this movie first starts, you get a song. You get one of their songs being performed by him and the other member, which we'll get to in a second.
Yeah.
I did not like it.
No, it's penetrating music.
And I like heavier stuff, but I also like a little bit of melody when it's coming to, to some of the music.
Or English-speaking language.
But... It's not something I'd be into, but like it'd be interesting to like I'd go to a show and they'd be like an opening band or something.
Right.
And I'd be totally okay
I
with
would
it.
Walk out.
I know you would.
I mean, that first scene, I felt like I was back at Skeletones back in the day, which is like a super underground kind of punk metal place a lot. And you're like right up on the artist.
Yeah.
And so it felt raw. It felt authentic.
Oh, that just gave me goosebumps. I miss that.
Yeah. I was going to say, you miss concerts, so
damn
I probably,
bad. And, like, I'd go see somebody I don't like if I that meant I got to go see a concert safely.
Oh, yeah.
It looked like one step up from a basement show. Like, it was really grungy.
He's definitely a grinder. He's persistent. He's desperate in a lot of the occasions during this movie. One thing I found about him, and I didn't really do any research on this. I kind of just noticed it as I was watching it the second time through. I feel his character goes through all five stages of grief throughout the entirety of this movie. And not for a loss of a person, but for the loss of his hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find step one, which is denial. His first goal is to continue the tour.
Yep.
He's like, oh, I can play on visual cues, or you play to me so I can figure out what's going on. We will make this work.
Yep.
I can handle it. It's not a big deal. It'll come back eventually.
Yeah, that's his first response.
Yeah. And it just doesn't exist. Second one is anger. And one morning, he completely destroys part of the RV, which terrifies his bandmate as she stands there watching him kind of destroy some of the equipment that's in their home. It's really their home.
That was rough.
Next one being bargaining, and that is, do I get these implants? Can I get these implants? I'll be back to normal. Mm-hmm. No big deal. Never affected. If I do this, if I can come up with 80 grand, I'm fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll pay you 80 grand. You fix me. And then next one, depression. Finding out the implants don't work as designed or as expected the mm-hmm. design would be. And all the work had been for nothing. And people are moving on without him. Mm. So you get that near the end of the movie. And then
I was depressed at that point.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard not to be when that comes up.
And then I remembered they're connected to Blue Valentine, which I think is probably the most depressing movie I've ever all seen time. In my life. So.
And then our last and final stage of grief is acceptance. And you get that at the end of the movie, sitting on a bench in Paris, feeling the moment of stillness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a satisfying ending, even though not everything you want to happen happens. It feels complete at that moment.
Mm-hmm. That was one of the narrative things I caught on the second watch that I didn't the first time around. I remember really appreciating the ending shot, this kind of contemplative, mm-hmm. Existential thing, which can seem like a cop-out in some movies. It felt like it closed really well the first time I watched it, but the second time I was like, oh, shit, that's calling back a number of
huge.
Things from before. Yeah. Which I think that's what I picked up mostly on the second watch through was his dive into his addict behavior,
mm-hmm.
which is something that didn't quite... It wasn't obvious to me the first time around, but it was more of his try for the fix in the commentary of using the word fix to mean so many different things. His conditions, his contingent deals, his selling the RV, everything was so addictive in the way he carried it out, and I was so glad I picked up on that the second time.
Good.
But I ended up really liking this character, which is something I didn't expect.
Really? Yeah. I thought his character, not just the portrayal, I think his character is someone I want to meet. Like, was a real person, I would want to meet this person. Mm-hmm. He, just the way he acts with other people, he's not a dick. He is going through something that is the hardest thing in his life.
I'm going through some shit, Lou.
And you don't have to be an asshole. Like, so many movies nowadays, that character needs to be an asshole to have that growth. He was never the jerk.
No.
His arc had nothing to do with his personality.
No, mm-mm. at all. And you can tell he is a really good guy. He is just going through the hardest thing in his entire life.
Yeah, I don't think that I would react this way. And I'm a pretty calm, normal yes. person. But like, I would have been terrible to people.
Yeah,
I
would have.
It's just so frustrating, like losing part of yourself.
Yeah.
Especially when it's your livelihood at the same
time.
Right,
exactly.
Oh, God. Okay, that's the horror element.
Yes.
So we've covered Ruben. Nate, tell us about his bandmate / lover / girlfriend.
Yeah. So this is Olivia Cook. She plays Lou.
Mm-hmm.
You might recognize Olivia from Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That movie Ian talks about a lot.
I've seen that. It's one of my favorites.
Thoroughbreds, which I think...
Hell yeah.
I was like, I know Sam's a big fan of that one.
Yes.
Opposite Anya Taylor-Joy.
Correct.
Yeah.
Who's having her moment.
Yeah. She is big right now.
Blowing up. Ready Player One, which I think was probably her biggest
role. Definitely.
Yeah. And biggest movie she was in.
Definitely. Yeah,
definitely. You don't see her face a ton in that movie.
No.
Which is like part of the story and part of just kind of a dumb little twist that's included in that movie.
Right.
We need to talk about the sheer crime that is making Olivia Cook look ugly as possible or hiding her away from people in movies. Because all these things she's in, she's really unattractively done up, mm-hmm. especially in Sound of Metal. And she just is covered in almost everything else she's in.
Yeah, I think she's just open to do it. And I think if you're an actress and you're willing to do that, awesome. You can play way more interesting roles, I think, if you're willing to make those changes. Ready Player One seemed like a cop-out. They're like, oh, I'm hideous. I'm like, you are still Olivia Cook. You just have a birthmark.
Barely, even. They didn't even, like... I feel like in the book, they made her even uglier.
Yes.
And they were like, well, let's add a little bit here and there. And
The book's real thing was that she was a girl.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, the whole surprise is that, oh, it's a girl that's good at video games.
What?
Oh, it's not possible. Oh, sorry to interrupt you, Nate. Can please continue.
That's okay. Lou. And another TV series that people would know is Bates Motel.
Oh, yeah.
Have you guys checked that
out? I watched one episode of it, and it was creepy as hell, and I was like, not going to happen.
I love Psycho. I just haven't seen the show yet.
Yeah, I haven't either.
Freddie Highmore and Vera Farmiga are the main characters. And then I don't know how they turned into a multi-episode
series. I have no idea.
Series. Yeah.
Sometimes, too, I don't want to check out the show until I know that it's going to continue. So that was kind of one, knowing it got multiple seasons, I definitely want to go back and check it out.
Now that it's all done. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But anyways, Olivia's character, Lou, she's the other half of Blackgammon. Mm-hmm. So she's the singer, definitely one of like the writers and influencers on their lack of melody. But yeah. Like,
singer is in quotation marks.
Yes, yes. It's more of a scream and chants and, you know.
She stands at the mic.
She plays the guitar.
Yes.
And she also works the looper pedal. So she does two of those other things as well as singing, which is very impressive. Yeah, still don't like the band, though.
No.
I heard it was, she actually wrote that first song.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, performed everything herself, too. Very cool. So
she does have a performance near the end of the movie, which is very touching, and she does have a very beautiful voice.
For sure. But, yeah, so she has her own depression but love for Ruben at the same time.
Yeah.
So they're both struggling with things in life, and as we learn later on, they both have saved each other in different ways.
Yes.
But not, it's not an easy life. Like, everything's not great in the RV at all times.
And she's a character, you don't get her backstory until the end.
Right.
You find out her dad is wealthy pretty early on, and I was like, why is this spoiled kid out here in this RV?
Yeah.
You think she's just like this against authority.
Rebelling against her dad. Yeah. And I'm like, and then you find out her real backstory, which is her dad and her mom got a divorce, moved to the United States, and eventually her mother killed herself. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, that's much darker. And I feel bad for having those thoughts at the beginning of the movie.
But that was kind of like a surprise, too.
Yeah.
Like, she's so much more deep than we expected.
Right.
And even that opening scene in the RV, you can tell that she has that self-harm on her arm.
Yeah, so they make it very obvious.
They mentioned scratching, but you can tell there's been razors involved. It's scarred over. But yeah, so I obviously, as we learn more and more about her family issues, that becomes more prevalent. Mm-hmm. But so yeah, if Ruben hurts himself too, that makes her hurt. Like, they're so connected emotionally. Yep. I mean, their whole lives are together. They live in this small space. Their careers are together. There's really no escaping when there is an issue. Like, you have to deal with it head on.
You can't just walk away.
No, or else you're lost in Nebraska.
And they met after he got clean.
Yeah.
Which I think is another major point for their relationship, is she knows the fear of him being an addict, but I don't think she's ever experienced him express addict behavior, or at least use.
Exactly.
By the way that it was described in the movie. So that changes their dynamic so much. He's there, you know, he calls her ride and die, and he saved her, but it's a totally different dynamic than someone who experienced that with her. So you notice when as soon as he lights up a cigarette, she's immediate to call his sponsor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that's how terrified she is of this, but also realizing what his downfall means for her. I think there's not a selfish way, but a recognition of the fact that he is her at the same time.
Oh, for sure.
They're so intertwined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, as we move on, she retreats back to France after Ruben checks into this halfway house led by the deaf community.
Yep.
And she needed to do what was best for her and what was best for Ruben.
Right.
And the worst for the audience.
Yeah.
I did not like this at all.
I completely disagree. And I honestly think I don't like the word retreat, because I don't think that she's running away.
Okay.
She is his support system and knew what was best for him.
Yeah.
Was not for her to be there. And what she ends up doing as after she leaves, she's able to move on a little bit. She is able to grow as a person. And that's kind of why we see that transformation over that period of time, is because she's able to grow in a different location, reconnect with her family, which she has been away from for so long and who she resented for so long.
Mm-hmm.
It's a chance for her to grow out of what she needed to be saved from.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's most important about her character, is she's not saying, all right, so long, I'm never going to see you again. She's like, you need this for you, and I will grow somewhere else during that time. Because I think they may not, based on the ending, they're not going to end up together. It's not going to happen.
No.
But that doesn't mean that they weren't the most important people in each other's lives.
And I think at that moment, that was what showed the greatest love.
Yeah.
Was her leaving.
100%.
And it had to be like that taxi scene where she's going to leave him finally to go to the airport. Oof. He gets to keep the RV. Like, oh, that's just raw emotion.
That,
like,
was rough.
I was moved. Mm-hmm. It was wild.
Yeah. I the thing that just bothers me is that she gave him that distance, but then it felt like she selfishly took it and moved on without him. And then she kind of did that thing where she was like, I want to break up, but I'm going to make you tell me that you want to break up. And that just hurt me so much to the core. Yeah. It was like she manipulated him to do that, when this guy has been through so much shit.
Right.
And I, again, I don't know. I've never been that close with an addict or to recognize mm-hmm. that type of behavior or that you need to get out and stop enabling or all of those things.
That codependency. Too.
Yes.
Like they were almost addicted to each other.
Oh, in many ways. Mm-hmm. And that's what hurt me so much was I was buying into that. I was buying into that relationship. And then when it was so quickly taken away, I mean, she's a lead character for the first 20 minutes and then she's gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was totally like digging life without her. I was like, everything's fine. But then when she comes back, I was like, well, at least I want you to be back in this. Like, I don't want you to just be gone.
That's the hard part too, though, is because she was able to grow and kind of figure out some of her own shit during that period of time. You don't want to be the girlfriend that's like, all right, I'm glad you're feeling a little bit better. I'm glad you can hear a little bit and you've got a little, some of your shit together. See ya.
Yeah.
And that had to be the hardest thing in the world for her character.
Yeah.
And the fact that he notices her scratching at her arm where all those scars were and recognizing, ooh, maybe this isn't something that's the best for her, or maybe that isn't the best for us.
And it was his time then to sacrifice.
Yep.
You know, for the best for her too. It came full circle, and
it just hurts so much. Like to see two people give 50% and have it be like one of the most beautiful relationships, even though it's codependent, and then to see someone just not give that 50% anymore was just so painful. Gosh, this is bringing up like just really bad vibes right now.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's move on.
Oh, I had a quick question about Lou for you guys. Could you picture Dakota Johnson?
Absolutely
in this role?
Not.
I was baffled when I read that. Like, I still cannot picture her playing this part.
And we've seen her in some wild roles in Suspiria and Bad Times at the El Royale. I think the closest she ever came to that was Bad Times at the El Royale.
Yeah, she's bad in that.
Right.
Yeah.
And but she's angry bad. She's not like this kind of more emotionally bad.
Yeah, she's not a support system or anything like that.
Right.
I don't think she could do it at all.
See, I'm not going to put it past her. I mean, she can do pretty much anything that's been thrown at her. I mean, she's convincing in what we've seen her in, so it wouldn't be a huge stretch. But I definitely, I can't find someone else that I would prefer.
Samara Weaving.
No, never.
You don't think so?
No.
Mm-mm. I think she could do it.
Too pretty.
You can grunge her down a little
bit. Yeah, you can dye the eyebrows.
Because I'm not saying that's important to the character. I just thought that I was able to feel Olivia Cooke in this.
Oh, yeah.
Based on her vulnerability, she wasn't distracting because of the way she looked.
And I think it works with an accomplished but yet still small-time actor.
Yeah,
like somebody that isn't the huge name recognition that you're going to get with a Dakota Johnson. I think that would bring in the people that aren't going to enjoy it for what it is. Mm-hmm. More like, oh, it's just Dakota Johnson, so I'm going to get excited about it.
Yeah. I can't picture anyone else other now than Olivia Cooke playing this.
Oh, yeah.
She was great.
You found your niche, honey. Keep it up.
Keep it up.
So let's talk about our third character here is Paul Racy as Joe. And you probably don't recognize Paul Racy. I didn't before this movie. He's a veteran guest TV actor, but this is his first major film role where he received an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor. Kudos to him.
Mm-hmm.
As we mentioned before, he is a CODA in real life. This is a new term for me, but it stands for a child of deaf adults.
Oh,
so in real life, his parents are both deaf and he is a hearing person.
Have you guys seen the new Google commercial introducing CODA?
No.
Oh, I think I might have seen that.
So he's like, it's a presentation about connecting with new technologies. And he's like, I was born a CODA this past year during COVID. It's been awesome to connect with my parents.
Okay.
I did all this translation. Now he has a son and they're so excited to meet their grandparents. And I was like, wow, how timely. Because I saw them in the same week, like the movie for the first time and this commercial. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, everything more about disability is becoming more mainstream and inclusive, as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool to see.
Not to mention that Sundance 2021 was won by a film, CODA, which is now a frontrunner for Best Picture at the Oscars this coming year.
Nice.
Featuring the child of two deaf parents.
Great.
So, I mean,
impressive.
Yeah.
Huge, huge, huge movements. We'll talk about that in a second here. But Paul Racy plays Joe, who is a lip reader. That's how he's kind of been able to modify his life.
Mm-hmm.
He is a Vietnam veteran who lost his hearing in the war. So he was not born deaf. He same kind of similar scenario to Ruben, who lost it in a real life scenario. He is the program leader of this halfway house, I guess is a good term for it, for the deaf community. It's not a rehab, but it's also like a transitory place where people can live and get the treatment that they need while still being both in deep in their addiction, but also in deep in their community as well.
Yeah.
He's a recovering alcoholic. He makes that very clear from the very beginning. That's his reason for being there. I think, Sam, this is the reason why I love the second viewing. By the way, my second viewing changed everything. But
good.
My second viewing is what really turned me into Joe's character, or turned me on to Joe's character.
Sure.
It was just, my heart broke with his.
Yeah.
And I don't think I noticed him cry the first time. I think in the end
when
scene.
When he leaves?
Yes. I didn't notice it the first time because his skin is kind of wrinkly and I didn't quite look at it. But after watching clips of the movie since and then watching it the second time, I was like, holy shit, him crying just destroyed me.
Mm-hmm.
Just destroyed me completely. Same. Loved this role.
He was great. And learning his backstory after the movie, I'm like, how perfect. This is so good.
Because he's a Vietnam vet as well. So he has connections there. I mean, he's basically playing himself, which is really cool. Yeah. And the fact that he got to utilize his real life expertise in the role was so fulfilling to hear after the fact.
And you can tell that he just cares about every single person that comes to his door. Any type of person that might come to his door, when Riz walks out of the van or the RV, he doesn't bat an eye. He doesn't flinch at all.
No.
He's excited to have him there. He's excited to handle him and try to get him into this community and understand. His first chore that he gives on the chore wheel is Ruben needs to learn how to be deaf.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is just a wonderful thing. And he doesn't let it hinder him at all. What he's able to do is amazing. And you see him walking through the halls of this school and giving high fives to people.
Yeah.
He's just a character that's so full of joy. And heart for everyone that he interacts with, that when he has to do something tough, it hurts him.
Mm-hmm.
And you can feel it hurt him.
He's a Pixar character in real life.
He is. He's like a father and a brother at the same time. So he could like walk alongside. He doesn't necessarily have authority over them or look down ever. He just cares for them so much like a dad too.
Yes.
It was cool to see. And the deaf community too is such like a family. And you can tell like he's so ingrained in their culture in real life and in the movies. So.
Yes. Yeah. Beautiful performance. And so much more appreciated the second time.
Good.
So definitely worth that second. But Sam, there's a fourth character you want to mention.
Yeah. I wanted to put in a character that isn't a living character, but so important to the plot of this movie.
Tell us more.
And that is the RV. Played by a vintage Airstream 345 motorhome. I had to look it up.
You might recognize him in previous performances.
I had to look it up to see what it was. This vehicle is so important to everything that they're doing in this movie. The start of the movie just shows how important the RV is for the day-to-day life of Ruben and Lou. We spend a lot of time in there. We go basically straight from the opening scene that you read, Ian, to so much time in this RV, getting ready for the day, taking showers, sleeping, cleaning their equipment. All of that stuff is in there. You see every single part of this vehicle from front to back, which makes it so much more heartbreaking when he has to sell it.
Yeah.
It's like
a second breakup.
Yeah. To sell it to get his fix.
Because you can see there's just so many memories for them ingrained in this vehicle and everything.
You see magazine covers, newspaper articles all about Black Gammon and just everything is going on in there. And it destroyed me when it drove off and you never see it again. Because he makes the offer to get it back because he knows he wants it and he knows he loves it, but he just can't.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
The van life was 2020s in movies,
this
I guess.
This van was it way really cooler is. Than...
Franny McDee wasn't the only one shitting in a bucket this year. No, I'm glad you brought that up.
Thank you.
Thank you for mentioning the RV. So I want to take a brief second here to talk about other movies featuring deaf and hard of hearing characters, because this is not new, but we're seeing this really strong reemergence over the last couple of years and into the future now. So I had to go and look way back into 1948 was the first film that I saw that had any kind of Oscar consideration, and 12 Oscar nominations for Johnny Belinda in 1948. It's about
a kind doctor
who volunteers to tutor a deaf mute woman, but scandal starts to swirl when his pupil is raped and falls pregnant.
Jesus, that's
By the way, that tells you how old school this is when it's saying she falls pregnant. But 12 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture, and a win for Jane Wyman, who later became Mrs. Ronald Reagan. for a short period of time. And then the second one, we have to jump almost 20 years ahead. The Miracle Worker, which is one we're probably all familiar with. Mm-hmm. The story of Anne Sullivan and Helen Keller. 5 Oscar nominations and one for Best Actress and Supporting Actress for Anne Bancroft and Patty Duke, respectively.
That makes sense.
One that's probably more known to our generation, or especially if you know Marley Matlin, this is where she got her start, is Children of a Lesser God, 1985. Rhonda Hines, I believe, was the director, or Haynes. A new speech teacher at a school for the deaf falls in love with a janitor, a deaf woman, speechless by choice. Which is interesting there. 5 nominations, including Best Picture, and of course, Marley Matlin is the youngest Best Actress winner of all time at the age of 23.
Amazing.
For that role. And then one that I always go back to when I think about when I was doing this, I was like, the first one that came to mind was Mr. Holland's Opus. Do you guys remember this movie at all?
I don't. I know the name. I don't think
This was one of those movies that my family rented from Family Video all the time. It's from 1995. It stars Richard Dreyfuss, and he's like a music teacher at a local high school, but always had dreams to be a composer. Mm. And he actually, it's a biopic of sorts. It's based on a true story, but it chronicles his whole life, including the birth of his son, which we later learn is deaf. So this guy who is spending his whole life in music, and his son cannot hear any of it. And we learn in such a dramatic way, like they take this child to a parade and the sirens go off right in front of him and the kid doesn't react whatsoever. So it's a very dramatic way of pointing it out, but I will still always remember that.
Wow.
So that was another, I think Richard Dreyfuss got an Academy Award for Best Actor for that. And then most recently, we've seen this huge re-energization of movies featuring deaf and hard of hearing characters.
True.
It kind of started with The Silent Child in 2017, which won the Academy Award for Best Live Action Short Film. And it's blossomed from there. Also in 2017, we had Baby Driver, mm-hmm. Which, like A Star Is Born the year after, featured tinnitus, which is that ringing in the ear.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So both Ansel Elgort's character and Bradley Cooper's character suffered from that. 2018 was a huge year for this community with A Quiet Place leading on the horror side,
yep.
casting Millicent Simmons as an actual deaf person in the role.
Yeah.
And she will reprise that now in the 2021 sequel to that movie. And then we thought 12 nominations was a lot, but how about 13 and a Best Picture win for The Shape of Water,
mm-hmm.
Directed by Guillermo del Toro, won 3 other Oscars the same time. But I just thought, that movie is a whole other step. And I remember how innovative that was with subtitles.
Right.
Putting the subtitles up by the characters' faces or like where they were speaking changed that whole thing. I mean, granted, the whole fish love thing is a separate side of that.
Yeah.
But an interesting role for Sally Hawkins, got her a Best Actress nomination. But Sound of Metal itself wasn't even alone in this year's nominees, featuring deaf and hard of hearing characters. Feeling Through, which was actually executive produced by Marley Matlin,
which
is why she was a presenter at the Oscars this year,
right?
And probably will be a nominee next year from what I'm hearing. That was nominated for Best Live Action Short. Coming up now in 2021, I already mentioned Coda, which won the Sundance Film Festival. And that's more about, briefly here, it's when a family's fishing business is threatened, Ruby finds herself torn between pursuing her love of music and her fear of abandoning her deaf parents.
Mm.
So that Marley Matlin plays her mother, I believe. And that's directed by Sean Hader. Who did Tallulah, one of my favorite movies, an old Netflix movie. And then Chloe Zhao, fresh off her Best Director win, is picking up Eternals, which features the first deaf superhero in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
So cool.
Yeah. Played by an actual deaf actress, Lauren Ridloff.
Amazing.
So again, more representation, more inclusion. This was a fun dive because we kind of did something similar with people with disabilities in our Peanut Butter Falcon episode.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we mentioned Marley Matlin, but she's the first and only person who is deaf to win an Academy Award. But I just thought that this dive was especially fun in context with this movie.
Yeah,
so
very interesting.
Thank you for obliging me there. Let's jump into now our favorite scenes or lines.
Yes.
This movie Sound of Metal kind of follows three primary acts. The first is Ruben and Lou on tour, which mm-hmm. is the first 20 minutes or so of the movie. Act 2 is Ruben and Joe in the halfway house. So this is where we are introduced to Paul Reiss's character and really dive into Ruben's struggle. In the middle of this, he gets his cochlear implant,
mm-hmm.
which then takes us to Act 3, where Ruben and Lou reunite in France. So that's kind of where when I was referencing Act 3 earlier, that's kind of where I see the movie making the switch. Is not necessarily after his cochlear implant, but once he gets to France, it takes a whole new meaning.
Yeah.
So let's talk about our favorite scenes and lines. Nate, you want to go first?
Sure. Yeah. So I think my favorite one, it's early on when he gets to the halfway house and he goes outside and just starts fixing a roof. And
yes.
He just gets approached like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm just fixing the roof. You know, thanks for taking me in, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, Joe encounters him almost angrily.
I think he's really just baffled and confused. He thought he was doing a nice thing. And the line that he says is just, you don't need to fix anything here. And I think that just speaks so true about their personalities and being deaf and just their way of life. So I'll do a little education too.
Please.
It kind of comes off in the disability community. You have the medical model of disability where this is kind of what it used to be back in the day. Like, oh, you're born with a disfigurement. You're deaf. You have a learning disability. The medical model says we need to fix you. Like you are broken. We need to do this to cure you, to fix you, to make you better. Where now the social model, which is becoming more and more popular, obviously you still have the medical model, but as social work and a lot that I do is about the social model being like, you're complete, you're great. Like this is who you are. This is your identity. How can we help prevent obstacles? How can we help you break barriers? How can we help you achieve your dreams? Like what, how can we advocate? How can you advocate for yourself? Who can come alongside you? Family, friends, other organizations. And so I think there he's just saying like, hey, you don't need to be fixed. You don't need a cochlear implant when we see that come full circle at the end. But it's just like you're complete as who you are.
And if I'm correct here, there's also a huge stigma against cochlear implants for a lot of people in the community as well, correct?
Yes, definitely.
Not just for the way they work or how they work, because from everything I've read, it's a very accurate depiction of that sound.
Yeah.
But there's this the rife between these two different schools of thought that you were describing is actually quite more prominent than I would have expected.
Yeah, and they're one of the communities too that we've talked about person first language. So it's like, I'm a person with Down syndrome, or they're one that they've taken ownership. It's capital D deaf communities. I'm a deaf person, capital D. Like there's pride in that. There's nothing wrong with them. And it's amazing to see because essentially they all speak two languages,
right?
You know, being able to read and write in English most of the time and then speak in ASL. Like that's amazing. That's more than most of other average Americans can do. Like
more than I can do.
Yeah. And just like what other accommodations are out there? Like why can't we ingrain them more into our culture and kind of just have, there's another term called universal design. So like how can we design things in the future to just be more open to all? So it's like, oh, we're making a new building. Why do we need stairs up it? Why don't we just make a ramp? Because everyone can get up the ramp. Why not just do that from the get-go? Like why do you have to try to adapt after the point? So it's
so like, in this case, like signs with iconography rather than words.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
For like blind folks or, you know, more braille type stuff is what you're talking about, or
braille, or I think too, just interpreters at more speeches.
Like okay.
Now you're getting
them everywhere. Yeah.
Disability speeches. You're getting it more. Biden now is using them at his, but it's an additional thing, but why not?
Like,
why not just incorporate it with everyone and have those closed captions and things like that. So
it was really great that Paul Racy in Joe's character as a whole represented that divide and really brought, because, you know, in a lot of those movies that I talked about, there is a negative perception or there's a fix that needs to take place.
Correct.
For those people. And in this movie, it's very opposite of that, which there has been some backlash from different communities regarding that perspective that the movie takes. But I'm just glad that it's actually in this movie for the conversation to be had.
Yeah, people can talk and know that there are differences in thought. So
thanks for sharing and teaching us a little something, Nate. Definitely. Any other scenes or lines that stood out to you?
I mean, Act 2 is definitely not a pick-me-up, but it was just so emotional where you see him kind of start to spiral. As you mentioned before, like once he becomes like that addict again where he's selling everything, ripping apart what used to be so good and meaningful for him and represented so much, he's like, I got to get rid of it because I need to fix this.
And I love that word fix in this movie.
Yeah.
The different meanings that it plays. That was one of the things I picked up after a second view. I was like, holy shit, that is deep.
Yeah.
How could a three letter word make such significance in this movie and have so many meanings to it? But no, beautiful. My favorite scenes kind of took place in the first act, which I think reflects, you know, it sounds like you're act two, Sam's act three, and I'm act one with our favorites here. But just the relationship between Ruben and Lou is what really drove me throughout watching this is when in the particular scene when Ruben walks off stage after he's been informed that his hearing is going to be gone and he tries to play again anyway. He storms off stage when he can't hear anything and the show isn't working and he storms off. He goes in this back alley and he fully realizes now that the damage has been done. Like he cannot.
It's not coming back.
No. And just the simple, it's almost emotional to say, it's like, I can't hear anything. And we hear it muffled. And it's just the simple statement of, I can't hear anything. where Lou is realizing this for the first time too. We're kind of experiencing this alongside her. She had no idea. He hadn't told her at that point. So that was just, that blew me away. That whole scene in that back alley was just stunning. Riz's best, that would have been my Oscar clip for him. And then the goodbye between the two of them. Jesus, that was tough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, and all takes place in the backdrop of an Uber driver that's just the chillest Uber driver ever. Like, not yeah. rushing anybody along. He's like, you guys do your
Riz
thing.
Riz hits his car.
He punches it.
I know. I would have gotten out like, dude.
Come on.
Canceled fare.
Yeah. But after that angry explosion inside the RV that Sam mentioned, which was difficult to watch anyway, mm-hmm. Which is what was in the trailer. And it, by the way, the trailer makes it sound like it's a really shitty acting scene when it's not. They snip apart together, which is unfair because he actually makes that work in mm-hmm. a way that didn't appear to be. But when he tells her, oh gosh, this is another hard one. You're my fucking heart, Lou. Mm-hmm. You're my fucking heart. And then when she drives away, he pounds his chest, almost like his heart's not there anymore. He needs to revive himself. Whew.
You're right.
Gee, like
100%.
Sam, yeah. I hate you. Why did you do this?
Why did you make me watch this twice?
Yeah. On the lighter side, though, when Ruben beats the young kid in the ASL classroom with
amazing.
The alphabet,
yes.
when he on the do-over, not even the first time, but he like has full victory when he beats him the second time, that just made me smile. So
yeah,
I love that.
Those celebrations were great.
Yeah.
The time on the slide where he was playing the drums on the slide so the little boy could feel it, that was amazing. My favorite scene of the movie is not necessarily like, it's not a pick-me-up. It is one of the toughest scenes and is definitely Paul Racy's Oscar clip, if yeah. we're gonna call it that. But it's when Ruben and Joe are sitting at the kitchen table after he returns to the halfway house post-surgery. So he's wearing his hat. He's covering up his bandages. He's covering up his implant.
He did the deed.
He did the deed.
Did the deed.
But it's really just revealing to Joe about the surgery and trying to figure out his next steps, what he's going to do with his life. And he wanted to use Joe as a sounding board as well as a financial helper in getting his vehicle back and getting the RV back after it was sold. And there's two lines in here, and they're paraphrased on what I put on here. And that's moments of stillness, which he mentions is being able to sit down and just be still and be there at that moment, which I don't think Ruben understands quite yet. He doesn't understand until the last scene of the movie.
I didn't understand until the last scene, yeah.
And then one that hit me the hardest was, you look and sound like an addict right now. And you get a lip smack, and then Ruben tries to explain himself and then pauses and then tries again and pauses, and he realizes he's right.
Yeah.
And he realizes exactly what's going on. And he then tries to apologize to what's going on. And what ends up happening is Joe has to kick him out of the halfway house because he was talking about how the deaf community doesn't want, they do not see this as a disability.
That particular community, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They do not see this as a disability, and implants are circumventing that. And it's a bigger problem, and we cannot have you here since you had that surgery.
He broke the trust.
And all those relationships with all those kids and teachers and partners at the halfway house, and like that's, those relationships
are gone.
Destroyed. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what was so painful was I thought in that moment, the first time I watched it, that Joe was the bad guy. When really it was hard to convince myself that Ruben made the choice. And this was the first time the second time he realized that this was a mistake that he was going to regret. Mm-hmm. First time is when he turned it on. Second time is this scene. And the third time is when he gets to France and realizes that his relationship is gone.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All this attempt, this addict behavior to fix this thing.
To go back to what it was before.
Yes.
Screw all the people that's touched my life. Screw all the people that I built relationships with now as a deaf person.
Mm-hmm.
And you lose them both.
Darius Mitre, write us the version where he stays and like gets a job there and is becoming like prosperous and all that. I want that movie instead.
You want the La La Land cut back from that ending and go a different direction.
Revise. No, wow. And the fact that we just each said two or three scenes and none of them were the same, and I love all of them,
yeah.
just tells you this movie is quality.
It's built on so many, and we didn't even talk about some scenes that are so impactful.
Oh, yeah.
Like the first time he gets the hearing test, and you get to hear what he hears through the headphones, and you're like, and this is when, if you're not wearing headphones while you're watching this movie, you're going to miss 90% of what the doctor hears
mm-hmm.
or what the doctor is saying, because he's missing like 90% of what the doctor is saying.
Speaking of sound.
Yes.
That's a great segue into our technical elements section.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where this movie is just next level.
Uh-huh.
It's not. There was not even competition for this in my mind. So let's talk a little bit about the sound design first here. We have to give credit to Nicolas Becker. I have to say it the way that he pronounces it. It won an Academy Award for Best Sound. And there are so many reasons why. The first is the contrast of sound in the movie.
Yeah.
We talk about this piercing, angry opening scene that's loud and obnoxious and violent. And by the way, if I could brief again throw in my mom's reaction to this movie,
oh, yes.
Totally turned her off in the first 5 minutes. I don't think she made it much beyond that, which I can't blame her for. It's assaulting.
Yeah.
It's an assaulting sound. And then the first cut after the title shows on the screen is the stillness and quiet of the RV.
But there are still so many sounds,
yes,
that are turned up just a bit.
Just
so
enough.
You get to hear the dripping of the coffee. You hear the shake being made. You hear the little air canister spraying the equipment. You hear all the small things, which makes that next,
yes,
cut to the RV so much scarier.
Oh, yeah.
It's just this combination of the abrasive and the gentle to give us and set up that contrast so that those different choices the next time around stand, yeah, out even more to the audience, whether they're headphoned or not. But what that does with those, because this is all Foley work. So we've talked about Foley work on the show before.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, these are sounds that are created after, and not necessarily by the actual production sound, but created in a laboratory, really, where they make these sounds. And what the film does so expertly is it draws the audience's attention in with those sounds to increase our awareness of their absence of them in the next time we come back into the RV.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it never once, though, because this is a very delicate balance to make, to balance the Foley of clothing. Like, I can't even do it against this microphone, but that's how they were able to bring out sounds without making, mm-hmm, them sound overbearing or unnatural.
Right.
They still were able to place them at the forefront of the sound mix that made us aware of them, but also not distracted by them. So it's expert. Like, I can't even, it's probably like to the decibel that this was done that I just think is so genius. When Ruben goes back into the RV for the first time, there was one particular scene that really stood out to me, was where the sound design came in. He goes back into the RV for the first time and we hear the drums with him inside and it's muffled and we can't hear it. And then the camera cuts out to the exterior of the RV and it's loud and obnoxious,
right,
mm-hmm, as if we're sitting outside of it. And I just was blown away. I just remember I stopped it. I almost texted you, Sam. I paused the video and I was like, whew, I almost had to take a deep breath because that's how genius,
yeah,
so this good was. I also want to talk about a couple of the other fun little things they had to do with microphoning. So for the scene where Riz is kind of first realizing that his hearing is going away, and he does what any person would do, you know, check to see if your ears need to pop or check your jaw. They built a little camera or a little microphone that they put inside his mouth,
oh,
to,
wow,
get those sounds so heightened. So what you're hearing when you hear his jaw kind of adjust and you hear him pop his ears, that's from a camera inside of his mouth.
Amazing.
Just genius. And another interesting thing that they did with the, you know, keeping the whole, what it sounds like when he has his cochlear implants in, that's all separate. To get specifically that sled, or excuse me, the slide scene that you mentioned, Sam, mm-hmm, they used a contact mic, which is something that doesn't use like a way a typical mic does, which is gathering sound waves through the air.
Mm-hmm.
They attach it to something and it connects through vibrations.
Oh, okay.
So what we hear is actually the sound of that slide. It's not a typical microphone. And they did that to show exactly the kind of tonality that comes from that type of hearing for two deaf people communicating through that platform.
That's so cool.
Just blows me away. And what else? I mean, it's hard to even talk about this movie out without talking about sound design. We could talk about it for hours, but what, right, else stood out to either of you technically?
Yeah, just touching on the sound again. I've never seen a movie where the subtlety of sound and the addition of sound has driven the plot so much,
mm-hmm,
and represented so much in it,
mm-hmm,
from his chaos in the music to his life. As things get a little more calm and still, he gets some stability. And it's just the juxtaposition of some of those sounds with what's happening. It's fantastic. It's so, yeah, good.
And this is kind of where I, when I said it, this movie brought up some fears for me, and this sound design really is what brought it to a forefront, is that I have such an underlying fear of losing my hearing.
Hmm.
I clean my ears all the time. I try to, anytime I feel like there's too much wax in there, I'm trying to clean it out. I'm trying, which is probably worse for my ears.
Yeah.
But like, I want to make sure that I preserve that for as long as possible. It's just so scary for me, especially being someone who loves going to concerts and loves the loud music and loves loud movies and loves all of this. And the fact that Ruben was able to handle this as well as he did, made me think, like, could I do that? And yeah. I don't think I could.
It's so good. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah. It made me think about my real life, mm-hmm. and like, how would I react? How would I handle this? What could I do to try to prevent this? Would I be as stubborn? What would happen? And that all coming mostly from sound design is shocking, because I've had situations mm-hmm. where after a concert, my ears are either ringing or they feel muffled, and you're like, oh shit, did I lose my hearing because
right.
of this?
Yeah.
And like, you spend the entire day trying to figure it out, and use, like, hold your nose and like mm-hmm. blow out if there's anything
all
in
the
there.
Things that Ruben does.
Yeah.
Yeah. All mm-hmm. the things that he does, but his doesn't come back.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God mine has come back every time, but I can't imagine what would happen if it didn't.
It's almost like the fear of now getting off an airplane. Like, what's that going to be like? Even just the very temporary version of that
right.
feels so terrifying mm-hmm. because this movie is so immersive. And it does this not just with the sound design, but with its lack of sound design, too.
Yeah.
Because to have a whole scene of a group of deaf people communicating with one another for about 3 minutes, mm-hmm. all we have is the ruffling of clothes or the sound of
or
signs.
Hitting the table. Or...
Yes, which are not loud. I mean, you have to pick up that stuff mm-hmm. Through various technical choices that we've talked about already. But also, through all the ASL, there are no subtitles.
No.
Amazing choice.
So
perfect.
Best choice.
It's amazing.
You don't get subtitles until Ruben learns to sign.
Oh,
is that it? Okay.
Yeah, because they're out in the field, and he's starting to sign with them, and he's telling them to look at the flowers and all this stuff. That's where you see the subtitles.
Okay. Oh. See, I didn't. I turned them, like, once I realized they weren't giving me any help, I just turned them off. So I didn't even notice that. But I just thought that was another choice to put the viewer now. Not only are we hearing like Ruben, but now we feel as isolated as Ruben does
yeah.
within this community. Like, we're just sitting watching this meeting. I don't know about you all, but I was able to pick up on the Serenity Prayer at the opening of the meeting because I was kind of reading Paul Reese's lips.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I was totally lost. Even the dinner, everything was lost to me. But there was another particular sound that I thought was genius, and it's the singing. During Lou and her father, when they're singing their performance,
party in Paris.
And it transitions from what
everybody
what
hears.
Everyone else hears, and it slowly transitions and morphs into the distorted version that Ruben has. So good.
Yeah.
Devastating. Devastating,
yeah.
because you're like, he can't enjoy the thing he loves the most.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks so absent.
Yeah.
He just, that's the thing that was so painful in Act 3. And maybe I'm starting to turn around to Act 3 because it's just so genius, but
yeah.
that was the painful thing as a viewer, was like, he's just so absent.
Mm-hmm.
He's not there physically. He's not there mentally. And it took you that much more out of it with that particular segment.
Exactly. And the whole party itself just felt like social anxiety in a nutshell. Because he's at a party. He doesn't know anyone but Lou.
And barely her dad.
Barely her dad. They had a conversation a little earlier. He's in a t-shirt. Everyone is dressed up.
Yeah, he would not fit in even if he could hear everybody.
Yeah. And he can't communicate with anybody.
Yeah.
Especially because he doesn't speak French.
Yeah,
you know, so that's
too.
It's like layers on layers yeah. of inability.
And right. I had to look this up, and I found out that sign language isn't universal.
No.
And that is also really, really upsetting.
Yeah.
So even if there was somebody that could sign with him, not universal.
It would be FSL or
yeah,
whatever.
ASL yeah. is American Sign Language. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who studied Brazilian Sign Language,
oh.
like or Portuguese-related sign language in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not just that, but there are dialects
yeah.
of within those, same way you would find in either language. So
yeah.
it's so dauntingly scary.
It
so,
is.
Sam, I totally share this with you,
okay.
100%. A couple other things I just wanted to point out was that with the sound group, they said deafness is not silence. So even though when we're hearing from Ruben's perspective, it's not quiet.
There are things happening. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the major thing that this movie does that's positive for this community is they show that even a deaf person or someone who's lost their hearing doesn't hear anything. They still hear something. It's just not what we would expect it to be.
Yeah.
And then the whole concept of Ruben regretting this decision based on that sound that he hears after the implants was so, so hurtful. but it made me think about the title, because I remember starting the movie the second time and like, why is this called The Sound of Metal? It's such a Sound of Metal. It's just a weird title.
You don't listen to much metal music.
No. I was like, well, the opening scene reminds me, like, okay, this must be the connection. But then I thought, it's actually double meaning, because it connects the metallic and kind of machine-like noise that he hears at the end of the movie with his implants. Whew. And it went from like, this is a silly title, to that's the best fucking title of a movie this
year.
That
they could have ever called it.
Yes. I'm so blown away.
I rewatched it this afternoon, and I had on the descriptive subtitles.
Ooh,
so
interesting.
It even introduces like, it's like metallic grinding sound. Like that to help people who are not hearing it, like, really get into it. It's not just all muffled. It's not just silence. Like,
yeah.
You can hear this high pitch, and it's describing it. And I thought that was really cool to watch it in that way.
Yeah, it has the functionality, but it doesn't have the beauty of it.
Right.
Which is so, so tough.
Yeah.
This is why we pick these things apart.
Right.
It's just genius. Anything else you want to say on the technical side?
I'll say one more thing.
Yeah, please.
So they filmed it chronologically.
Yes.
And so there was literal physical separation between Riz and Olivia. Like, she's in it for the first part, and then she leaves. And I don't know the exact time period, but like, they've built all this on-set chemistry. It's, things are good. Their last scene together is that really emotional goodbye. Mm-hmm. And then they actually don't see each other for this long period of time. Wow. So that introduction again, like, that's awkward, not just as actors, but the characters too. Mm-hmm. And it's like, wow, that's so authentic and a genius move to direct in that fashion. Mm-hmm. And I also read too that, you know, Riz, they put in like hearing aids to the opposite of a hearing aid. It kind of like shuts out the other sound and only emits white noise to him.
Oh,
so
okay.
While he's acting, he's not hearing.
And I didn't know that.
And the opposite was true with Olivia. She didn't know what they were cutting out of what she was not supposed to hear or what Riz was hearing and not hearing. So they were literally like, in those times when they feel disconnected, like they're both in their own worlds acting at that time.
That's
stunning.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Stunning.
I was like, to think of all that, like, that's amazing. That's such dedication.
Well, what I read that Darius had spent a year before they even started production of the movie to plan all this out.
Wow.
So it took him 10 years to find the right actor.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting enough. And then they spent a year once they landed him to figure out how this was all going to work before they started filming, which is just genius to me, that they really knew what bases they wanted to hit. And speaking of the chronology, when Paul Racy says goodbye to Ruben, that's the last time he saw Riz until they started doing press for the movie.
Jeez.
So that was real emotion after spending all that time within the deaf community and being with those people. That's real emotion that you see on Paul's face because he was actually really sad that he was being done. And I read that Darius only did two takes of every scene. So whether or not that could have been his actual first goodbye and they were done and that was it. Just to show you, I mean, that's partly budget related,
right.
But also just a raw emotion it shows you how great these actors were.
Definitely.
Oh, it's just stunning. Just stunning. So let's move on. Sam, if there is a way for you at all to slam this, please do. And Nate, feel free to jump in as well if you got some Nate hate you want to share.
Oh, Nate hate. Okay, yeah. I like that.
This is where we get really picky. Yeah. Outside of the technical choices, we've just spent a whole time basically praising this movie. But any little sticky things?
I got a few.
I knew you would.
Always do, man.
It's number three on your list, so there's at least two things wrong with it.
All right. The first one I have is when they are parking the RV, one of the characters, of course. At one point, they park in front of a motion red light video board for the night, and it would be the worst place on earth to sleep. Like, all I was thinking about when I saw it the second time through, like, I wouldn't have caught it the first time. But the second time through, I'm like, why do you want to be next to that video board?
And it's a wide open parking lot.
The parking lot is so open. And what it made me think of, also because we were talking Marley Matlin, very well known for her character in Seinfeld.
Yes.
Of a Seinfeld episode when Kenny Rogers' chicken has a neon sign right outside of Kramer's apartment. And he cannot sleep at all because he has red neon light bursting through his window.
I love that this movie brought up Seinfeld and Kenny Rogers' chicken to you. Only on Time Sensitive.
My next one here also has to do with light. Okay. In a movie built around sound, the light was my issue. There is no way it's that bright at 5 a.m. I don't care where you are.
No. I thought about this too, Sam, because I was like, maybe I should get up early and start doing stuff. It's not light until 7 o'clock in the morning.
They're not in Alaska.
Yeah.
They're in Lake Missouri, right? Or something?
I thought it was filmed outside of Massachusetts, so it's definitely not possible there.
No.
Yeah. Lies.
And it happens twice. I was like, it would be pitch black when he got there. Before he started punching the donut. And my last one here is cutting your own hair doesn't go that well. Even if it's just a buzz cut. It does not happen. I have buzz cut my own hair multiple times. Of course, I'm not Riz Ahmed. But he would have missed spots. He was trying to go around scars, which would hurt so bad. No, it just wouldn't work. And his hair was perfect.
It was.
It looked fantastic. And no, it just doesn't happen.
Sorry, Riz.
From experience.
I buzz my own head too. And I'm like, maybe he spent those 7 weeks ASL working out, buzzing your own hair.
Yeah, that had to have been it.
No Oscar for makeup and hairstyling. It is not convincing.
Nate. Well, I have a Nate hate.
Nate hate.
And it's not necessarily hate, but I think the way they treated the cochlear implant process.
Sure.
Okay. Just being like, oh, nothing's going to be covered.
Yeah.
Oh, we can just kind of do this over the phone and you just show up and get your implant the day of. Like, there's way more to it. And I looked up that 90% of insurances do cover cochlear implants now.
Okay.
So I hope no one listening to this like gets discouraged if you have a loved one and they are looking for a cochlear implant. Mm-hmm. Like, there's ways to do it. You don't have to be terrified. And I think that they would prep you. Like, they wouldn't just be like, you'll get full hearing just like as you expect.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's got to be some education and parts to it. Like,
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. I had some thoughts on that because I saw this and I was like, well, I don't think he'd have insurance.
Right.
That was my question.
There's no way he would have insurance at this point.
No.
But you're right. The doctor telling them that it wouldn't be covered under insurance, even though maybe 10 years ago when he was trying to find the right actor, that was the case.
Yeah.
And then as far as the prep, I thought the exact same thing. I was like, there's no way they don't tell him what this sounds like. But then I thought about it. I was like, he's an addict.
He could have just ignored everything.
He knew as soon as he was told that there was a fix, he was going to get that fix. Tell me as much as you want that this is not going to sound the way it did before I lost my hearing. But all I recognize is that I'm going to get my hearing back.
That's a great comment, Sam.
I'll be the exception. It'll be perfect.
It'll fix me.
Yeah.
I'm the one in a million that this is actually going to really, really work on.
Pardon the pun. He probably got that and it was in one ear and out the other.
Yeah.
You know, that was probably the way he envisioned this. And it was going to be that complete return to normal. Because did you notice that even when the doctor told him, you will not get your hearing back, as soon as he told Lou, it's like, it'll come back. It'll come back.
Yeah.
So he clearly did not pay any attention whatsoever, but that's mostly out of grief and his addiction type personality.
Exactly.
Yeah. Gosh, I'm loving this more and more. Okay. Now a segment that we go to with specific questions about the movie or just any kind of final thoughts that didn't kind of come to fruition for you. If anyone has anything, I'll start with one just because I want to connect it to my earlier comments on the sound design. The question I kind of posed, and I posed this to myself and I'm going to answer it myself. Did this film win the film editing Oscar because sound mixing is no longer a category? Because
it would have won both.
I agree with you.
I think so too.
I think it would have won both. But remember, sound editing is the actual creation of sound post-production or finding elements to put into the actual movie. Sound mixing is actually layering those with the soundtrack, with the score, with dialogue. All those things being layered together is sound mixing.
Yeah.
So, but I think one of the things that this movie excels at, and I actually found some proof of this, is that it combines all that with its film editing. So that's why I think, as an Oscar person who likes to think that he can predict the awards, I wish I would have known this a little bit sooner or recognized this more, that how intertwined these were, because it could have given us the answer to who was going to win both of these awards.
Right.
Because especially because film editing was up in the air this year, so many different films could have won it. I wish I would have known this information before to make this connection saying, well, the editing and the sound mixing of this movie are identical. They're all combined. And I found some language from the director.
Okay.
Darius Marder actually departed from the traditional editing process by working simultaneously with sound mixers and the film editor, Mikkel Nielsen. He said, from my point of view, it was the only way this film would work. The merging of disciplines had to be consistent and never ending.
Yeah.
And clearly he knew this is part of his year-long prep.
Yeah.
And that's what I think makes the film editing stand out so much more, is that every time we cut to a different scene or to a different scenario or even just a different shot, the sound was different. They accompanied each other. And it just pisses me off that I didn't figure this out sooner.
And like even a scene that you mentioned pretty quickly, but it was the one where he's drumming in the
yes.
the RV.
Right.
That scene itself is solely it's so impactful.
Yes.
Because of the film editing.
That should have been it.
And the
idiot.
And they spent so much time on the editing versus filming. You know.
Yes.
Oh, two takes, we're done. Two takes, we're done. Mm-hmm. 24 days, we're done.
Yeah.
And then it was like weeks and weeks and weeks of all this layering and editing and oh.
It's just tremendous skill.
It's amazing.
It's so sad to me that in the year that there could actually be two great awards for sound editing and sound mixing that they've combined them into one.
Yeah.
Even though it would have won both, it just makes me so excited to finally understand this a little bit more, this art. Any other questions that stood out, Nate?
Something that I had was, do you think this would have been as powerful at all if he was not an addict?
Ooh.
It focused so much on kind of like that acceptance of the deafness, the change of relationship, career. They had the serenity prayer in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of it tied into him being an addict, but I was just trying to think of him as a character who isn't addicted. Would he have sold all the RV off? Would he have come up with other mm-hmm. plans?
I think maybe. I think it's certainly possible. I don't think we would have gotten as good of a performance from Ruben as a character
yeah.
had he not been an addict, because he would have reacted differently.
Right.
He would have probably been a dick or a jerk because he hadn't had as much of a challenge in his life. He hadn't gone through anything even remotely similar to this. And then with this, it feels like I'm recognizing that I have a problem
yeah.
and we need to fix it. And it would have been much harder for Lou to convince him to go to Joe had he not been an addict.
Right.
I think the whole movie is based on his desire for a fix.
Yeah.
Which it, again, ties in that three letter word plays such a role in this. It would not have been the same in my mind.
Right.
Because so many of his decisions are based on addict behavior, and in his addiction is fueling what he decides to do.
Right.
So he would have, I mean, if he got the news that he, as a drummer, was going to lose his hearing, he couldn't do that anymore, it might have been more rational, his response mm-hmm. to it, in his attempt to, maybe he would have done more research or found out, it wouldn't have been so impulsive.
Exactly.
But those characteristics of an addict, impulsivity, irrationality, those things are what drive the plot the way it does. Great question, Nate. Gosh. Oh, I love that. I have one more.
Yeah.
How much time passes between when Ruben actually is in the halfway house to when he goes to France? Because that was really unspecified.
Right.
We know it could be anywhere from a few days to, I think a max would be like 6 or 7 months, I guess would be my guess.
My thought was he was in the halfway house for at least 6 months.
Okay.
Probably at minimum, because he's learning a whole new language.
Yes.
And he gets pretty fluent.
Yeah.
Like, he is participating in all conversations and,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that takes time.
And he builds those bonds with all the people around him and is able to communicate yes. with all those people around him. He teaches the kids a drumming routine. And then I don't know how much time passes between the implants and going to France.
Right.
I would think a few weeks.
I think it's, well, because as soon as he gets the implants, he has 4 weeks to activate. So I figured he went, as soon as he activated, he went.
Oh, you think so?
Like, I think it was a knee-jerk reaction to okay. having that noise in his head, and now he has to find a way to escape that. So how okay. else do I do that? An impulsive trip to find
that
where
makes
Lou
sense.
Is.
That makes a lot of sense.
Because I wondered, too, you know, he's kicked out of the halfway house. Where does he go?
Where does he go for that 4 weeks?
He doesn't
weeks?
Have anything.
Yeah. I don't even think we are, I'm remembering a picture of a hotel, but I don't even think that was there. Now that I think back on it, it could have been something else. Where was he in those 4 weeks?
Oh, yeah. I think I remember the hotel scene now.
Okay,
but,
okay.
Yeah. But still, like, yeah, how much time passed?
And how did he afford that? I mean, yeah. I mean, that's not a cheap thing to do.
Right.
But the reason this came up to me, because I was thinking, okay, if Riz actually learned it in 8 months, so 8 months is kind of our cap for this particular example. If he's immersed in it, it'd be much faster than 8 months.
Yeah.
As opposed to 2 hours a day. But Lou moves on so much in that period of time.
Right.
She's got new music out. I mean, she's dropping a new album. Like, so much. She's reconciled with her father to a point where they're singing a song from her childhood together.
Mm-hmm.
That seemed like much longer than 6 to 8 months to me.
Right.
Like, she seemed
possibly.
Like a completely new person. And I can't say, you know, everyone's journey is different. It might have only taken her a few months to reconcile. I don't know. But that's where I was a little confused. It felt like two different timelines to me. That he was there for a much shorter bridge time and she was on her own. And maybe that disconnect is what really made me hate her at the end of the movie,
oh.
was that she moved on so quickly and he came so far in that period of time and she just not having it. which takes me back to the bedroom scene at the end when she basically makes him break up with her.
Right.
Forcing him to say, it's okay. It's okay, Lou. No, it's not okay.
It is, though. It is.
We all secretly want it to work out, but we know that in real life with all these obstacles, like, that might not have been realistic. And
yeah.
Who knows how much time he could sneak in to yeah. see emails. You know, they were supposed to have no contact.
Yes. And his sneaking was seldom from what we saw.
Yeah.
But plus he goes there without even communicating that to her.
Right.
Right.
Which, I mean, that's what makes me think.
I think it might be a year. I think it might be much longer than
okay.
we think it is.
I'm thinking of the outdoor scenes. Like, you never see the weather change. Like, it would snow in Missouri, you know?
Yeah.
We never saw a snow scene. Yeah. So it could be a full year that they show little things of when he gets
because
there.
Because we do get the skip. Because when they are playing in the field midway through the movie and he knows his sign language, he's winning those competitions.
Yes. Yeah.
It feels like a significant amount of time has passed.
So anywhere from 6 months to 20 years. Could have passed.
20 years, yes.
6 months to a year. Okay, thanks. I appreciate that. Okay, so Sam, let's get to the numbers and explain how this movie was successful, how it wasn't, and ultimately we'll talk a little bit about its under-the-radar-ness.
Yeah, let's do those numbers. It is a 7.8 out of 10 on the IMDb audience score with about 75,000 reviews. I feel like that number is going to go up since it has won two
yeah,
Oscars.
Yeah, some post-Oscar yeah. love.
It's gonna jump a little bit. Metascore of an 82. A Rotten Tomatoes critic score of a 97%.
Boom.
And an audience score of a 90%.
That is surprising to me.
This movie felt like at points it could be inaccessible for people.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's why I'm a little impressed with a 90%. But it makes sense. It's so well done. It's really hard to say, yeah, this movie sucked. Like, I can't right. imagine somebody telling me that. The critical consensus for this one is an evocative look at the experiences of the deaf community. Sound of Metal is brought to life by Riz Ahmed's passionate performance.
Boom.
It's true.
So and
true.
Paul Racy.
And Paul Racy.
Got to give him some love, too.
Yeah.
On the cash side, budget, all I could find was low seven figures. So we're not even into the tens of millions here. We're talking low single digit millions. Again, no box office here because Amazon keeps that under wraps.
Right.
And they sometimes they do. Sometimes they release some figures if they're favorable. So either this wasn't favorable. But again, it was a really unexpected year. So, I mean, I think last time I checked, Promising Young Woman was the highest grossing Best Picture nominee, and it was like at $7 million.
Wow.
So
very low this year.
It wouldn't have been, it would have been anything that we could compare to our other movies. But let's talk briefly about the under-the-radarness of this movie. First of all, Black Gammon by themselves is totally under the radar.
I'm glad you saw that.
Because they're on Under the Radar magazine inside the RV, which was interesting. I thought that was a perfect shout out to our show. But due to the COVID-19 delay, the film hit Amazon Prime almost 14 months after its Toronto premiere. So remember, I said it premiered in Toronto. That wasn't in September of 2020. It was September of 2019.
Right.
Wow. So this movie has actually been consumable by critics and masses now for almost 2 years.
Wow.
To just give you a concept of where this is. So it fits perfectly within our 18-month time period. Riz Ahmed, Olivia Cooke, and Paul Racy were not household names before this. Like we've talked about, we all kind of thought we knew Riz Ahmed, but right. we didn't really know where.
Exactly.
And Olivia Cooke is in a lot of things, but not really recognizable in those mm-hmm. things. And of course, Paul Racy, this is his first major film. So all the people who thought they knew Paul Racy growing up on this had no idea who he was. So all of you are liars. But then the thing that made this difficult to push with Amazon was it was one of four contenders they had this year.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, it was their biggest. Six total nominations is the most, and they're only one to get a Best Picture nomination, so they put a lot of money behind this. But they also had to compete with funds for Borat's subsequent movie film,
right.
For One Night in Miami, which they clearly went to sleep on. Huge.
They're like, we'll give you some of the nominees, but not the ones that you really yeah. deserve.
And I can't imagine they campaigned for any of them, because to have Leslie Odom not even win Best Song shows me that
that's
Netflix
rough.
Put some money yeah. where it didn't need to go, where HBO and Warner Brothers put some money where it didn't need to go, and really rode that Judas and the Black Messiah train, because that should have been there. But then Time, their best documentary feature nominee, also lost.
Mm-hmm.
So Amazon had a lot of money that I don't think they played well. right. with this. I mean, you know, they put it all into the Sound of Metal basket, and they did about as good as they could have, considering the performances that they were up against, right? Daniel Kaluuya giving a career best. His career's not huge, but he's got a lot of good shit in that career. Mm-hmm. And then Anthony Hopkins, it was an Anthony Hopkins, Chadwick Boseman year. Right. So basically Riz was third place from the start, and which is makes me so upset now thinking about this. But it just it's funny to see how Amazon stepping back into this Best Picture game for the first time and how they choose to market this, because this was all over the critical websites. From the time that Toronto 2020 was around, kind of like a rehash, because this didn't come out until November of 2020. So we've only been accessible to this as normal people for about, 6 months?
Right.
Yeah, not very long. Mm-hmm. But they timed the release well to meet the new release structure of the Academy and for eligibility. So I think they delayed it, not just for COVID, but for that purpose. And they played it very well. But I don't think a ton of audiences will see it because it was Amazon Prime.
Yep.
It didn't have a huge theatrical release, and theatrical releases weren't really a thing in November of 2020.
Yeah.
So again, it's not pandemic related, but I think there's just so many other things tied onto this that it had been so long since it premiered, mm-hmm. and that they were trying to more focus on the Academy recognition than the actual release, because they kind of just swore off making money on the movie.
Right.
Let's try to go for the critical awards. And they succeeded. Because
yep.
Paul Raci actually won the Independent Spirit Award for Best Supporting Actor.
Yep.
So there was hardware that was won for this.
I think for me, as we kind of alluded to Peanut Butter Falcon earlier, like that was huge on the radar in the disability community, starring him. And I really didn't hear much about this relating at all to disability.
Yeah.
And I'm a little surprised. I wonder if that's because it's rated R, so it's not as accessible to families.
Oh, that makes sense.
People love those like cheesy Hallmark films. And this is like raw and emotional, like not one of a feel good story.
Real.
Yeah, this is so real.
This here is real.
But like, I feel like more people do need to know about this film.
Yes.
And it resonates with everyone. You can find an emotion that you felt in your life, and it's amplified in this one.
Well, your comment about the R versus PG-13, that's why the Peanut Butter Falcon was so accessible, was it was PG-13.
Yeah.
This is not an R movie in by my mind whatsoever.
No.
It's just language.
Yeah. Lots of a few fucks and a naked lady drawing who turns into a tattoo.
Yeah.
but it seems a little unfair. Not that I'm saying this is a family movie by any means, because it definitely is not. But I think that also limited its scope and who Amazon could push it to.
Right, exactly.
Because when you've got One Night in Miami, which is family friendly, I think, in a lot of ways.
For the most part,
I mean, there's the language, I don't recall being an issue. I'd have to double check
there's
it.
There's a little bit, but it's not a ton.
Okay. But it just, you know, of all the movies that, because it wasn't going to be Borat, that's not their family movie. and Time is certainly a very dark movie as well. So it's surprising, but clearly obvious that this was not going to be promoted the same way a movie like Peanut Butter Falcon would have been to a community that is looking for representation.
Right.
Yeah. Especially when they have so much coming along the pipeline.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see what Eternals does. Probably a huge movie, family movie for that purpose.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Okay.
We're at the end of the show.
Are we?
We are at the end of the show, and we need to find out, is this movie worth your time? You, the listener, we want to advise you if you should seek this out and check out this movie. If you've been listening to this podcast, I think you will understand what our answers are going to be. But let's find out for sure. Nate, what do you think?
100% yes. I think you can learn so much from this about yourself, about others, about the community and representation.
Mm-hmm.
So showing the deaf culture was great, but also showing like deaf people of color, deaf people of different sexualities, mm-hmm. deaf people, you know, rich, poor, they could do it all.
Yeah. I love it. Ian?
It's a hard no for me.
What?
No, I'm just joking.
Oh my goodness. I was going to say.
No. I will say this is an advocate movie for a second viewing because the beauty of this is in the details. So if you're going to watch it a couple of times. And I very rarely advocate for that
mm-hmm.
Just because I don't think anything is, if you can't tell me a story in the first time I watch it, then you made a mistake. I made the mistake on this one. So I'm glad I took the second time to watch it. And I'm glad that you recommended watching it with headphones. Even down to one thing that stood out to me was we see Riz from the front the entire movie. But at the end of the movie, we see his back for the first time. And there's a tattoo of a clown crying on his back. Which is like, they went, because I tried to study his art the whole time.
His tattoos are crazy.
Really crazy stuff. It looks a lot like Pete Davidson's work from The King of Staten Island. Does,
yeah. Speaking about drug addicts and tattoos, like there were some bad choices made at some point.
It was very bizarre. But the back was this really illustrious, sad clown. And I was like, this whole thing, him getting these implants, him his whole life being uprooted is just a sad joke. He is the clown at the end of the movie. And I was like, holy shit. This has so much hidden stuff in it that I can't even begin to break it. Even with our hour and a half conversation, we barely touched the surface, it feels like, of all the things we could have talked about. But I just blown away. Sam, thank you for this reconsideration of this. This is why we do the show.
Yeah. And I will...
And did you think it was okay?
I thought it was pretty good. I'm going to be with you there. I'm going to give the same advice that I gave to you when watching this movie. Watch it with headphones on. This is a movie you cannot look at your phone while you're watching it.
No.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
Because so much of it is behind the eyes. And figuring out some of those looks, finding out when he gets those implants turned on for the first time. He doesn't say anything. You just see what he's feeling.
It's all in his eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that disappointment. And the sound is so good. We've beaten this to death. But you need to listen to this movie. It's similar to like watching a movie with subtitles. You can't look away or you'll miss something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how this movie works. I'm with you. Watch it a couple of times. It's totally worth your time. I don't think we've ever gushed about a movie like this. We've talked about movies we've loved on this show before, but I don't think we've ever talked about movies like the way we talked about this one tonight.
And I think you get so much more out of it when you discuss it with someone afterwards. So continue to tell your friends about this movie and talk about it. Yes. And you'll learn more and more each and every time.
Nate, you're going to come back every time because you make us like movies more. you help with this. But thank you for joining us. And thank you, our listeners, for joining us on Time Sensitive and for our review of Oscar winner. Gosh, that sounds good to say it. Two-time Oscar winner, Sound of Metal, directed by Darius Marder.
That's well amazing. Deserved.
So deserved. Nate, we really appreciate you watching this movie and reviewing it with us, having this discussion. Oh, it feels so good to talk movies.
Coming back to the show, giving us a second chance.
Definitely.
We need you, honestly.
But before you leave, Ian and I have one final question.
What are you into?
So I just restarted Game of Thrones. I was so disappointed, you know, the last season, whatever years ago. And for some reason, I've just been craving it.
Okay.
You know, good background music. I've been really busy. But also just in like growing up a little bit. Now that I'm engaged, we're house shopping now too.
Oh, look at you.
So I'm into, you know, growing up. Big life events.
He's registered at Bed Bath & Beyond.
If anybody wants to send a gift.
Right.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Nate. Like I said, honestly, we appreciate you being here. This has been a blast. And remember, you can find our entire Time Sensitive catalog. Even go back and find our Peanut Butter Falcon episode with Nate from the first episode of season 3. You can find that all on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or wherever podcasts are sold, or wherever you're listening to us right now.
And you can interact with us through Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can search Time Sensitive, or follow us on Twitter at TSMoviePod. That is at TSMOVIEPOD.
And a quick favor and a demand of Nate's friends.
Do it.
If you enjoyed our show, and really if you just like Nate, that's all we care about.
Yeah. If please, you want him back,
yes,
we need some reviews.
We won't invite him again unless there's a review saying explicitly to bring Nate back. But please go on to iTunes and give us a rating and review. It means a lot to us, and it's a great way for other people to discover our show.
Thank you for listening. For Time Sensitive, I'm Sam.
I'm Ian.
Take care.
This is Docs That Rock with Tracy Ferguson
and Sherita Darcy, a weekly podcast where we review the best documentaries on the planet.
We watch separately and we review together. So if you love documentaries, this is the podcast for you. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.